Hi guys, welcome back to the Nevermind Polly podcast. My name is Matt, I'm your host, and we chat to rock and metal bands from around the world. How are you doing? How are you living? I hope you're all doing well. Wherever you are listening to this podcast, we appreciate you for checking out the show. My guest this time around is the excellent Lauren Hibbard. Lauren Hibbard is a indie rock artist with a brand new record out called Girlfriend Material. We chat everything all about her new record. We talk about everything about growing up at the Isle of Wight. We talk about working with the excellent Aaron Gillespie of Under Oath as her producer on this record. We have a heck of a lot of laughs. You won't be hearing this episode until the release date, which is the 22nd of March. I'm recording this on the 1st of February, so that is all there for you, just for information in the background. But yeah, this is a fantastic conversation. I want to do a huge, massive shout out to Lydia and Melissa, who look after their PR to sort this one out. This was a lot of back and forth to get sorted, but I'm really, really glad that we managed to nail it down with Lauren. Lauren is going to be heading out very, very soon across the world in support of her new record. So make sure you check on her social media and things like that for dates. In terms of the podcast right now, we've got lots of things coming in the future we're very, very excited about. Hopefully a lot of them you already heard and you already have enjoyed. And as I sit and record this intro in February 2024, I'm making a very, very slow, very subtle return to YouTube as well. So there's some content over there potentially for you to go and enjoy. So you can go and do that over at Nevermind Polly Podcast on YouTube. Until then, basically, just if you want to help support the show, you can by going into the socials and sharing our stuff. It's Nevermind Polly Podcast on Instagram and on Facebook, and also we're on TikTok as well under Nevermind Polly Podcast or Nevermind Polly Pod. I can't quite remember off the top of my head. Anyway, I'm going to shut up and let you guys listen to my conversation with Lauren Hibbard on the Nevermind Polly Podcast. Let's get to it. Hi guys, welcome back to the Nevermind Polly podcast. My name is Matt, I'm your host, and we chat to rock and metal bands from around the world. And this time around, we're chatting to an artist who I've been really, really excited to sit down and talk to. We've been back and forth via the lovely PR people to get this one nailed on, but today I'm chatting with Lauren Hibbard of Lauren Hibbard. I was about to say you're a band then, but you're not. You are just a single individual lady and artist. How are you doing? How's things?
I'm doing good, thank you. It's funny you say that because I sometimes do feel like there's two Lauren Hibbards. There's Lauren Hibbard of Lauren Hibbard, and then there is Lauren Hibbard.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense.
It does. So I'm being Lauren Hibbard of Lauren Hibbard in this current moment. So you weren't wrong.
No, absolutely fine. Absolutely fine. So we are here to talk about your brand new record called Girlfriend Material. It's out on the 22nd of March. Which, as everyone hears and watches this, it will either just be released or it's now coming out to be released. So normally I release on a Monday or a Friday. So depending on how the schedule sits, I should be going out the day of. But
amazing.
That being said, we're having this conversation on the 1st of January, 1st of February, even not January, 1st of February. It's just over a month and a bit away. How are you feeling ahead of its release? Because I feel like I've never released an album, right? But I'm having this conversation with you now. And with all intensive purposes, this is going to be a great conversation. And I'm going to have to sit on it for like till the 22nd of March. And I'll tell people about it. And then it will come out. And it's like, ah, that was a cool thing that happened. Is that kind of how you feel about the record? Because it's been done for so long. And you just had to sit on it and go, ah, it's out there now. It's now everybody else's.
It's an oddly slow process to this point. Mm-hmm. So actually, sometimes this point can feel like the fastest bit because it's, you know, you spend all this time writing the record, then you go and record it, then you hear kind of different mixes, then it's mastered. Then you're into like creation world and it's kind of this artwork thing, building videos and, you know, a single comes out. And it feels like that bit is so long that actually when it comes down to it, I sometimes think it comes around really fast and I'm like, oh my gosh, my album is out next month. That is wild.
Yeah, for sure.
Because you always feel like you've got forever. And then it does just, and when they first say a release date to you, you're like, oh yeah, that's ages away. That's all right. But actually you blink and it arrives. But there's always like a base level of excitement. And then like a nervous anticipation, hope people like it kind of thing.
Absolutely. So the again, I've never been in a band, but what I can relate to with that is I'm getting married in July, right? And I thought, well, fantastic. Great month to get married. When are you getting married? This is completely off topic. When are you getting married? What date are you getting married?
Oh my God, no, I'm not getting married. I meant same thing as in
same thing. It's fine. It's all good. It's all good. No, because like I say, it's in July and I'm like, oh, we've got loads of time. And I'm like, we're literally in February. We've got like no time. Luckily, it's all getting sorted. But it's just one of those things where it's like you blink and it just sort of happens. So yeah, it's a crazy, crazy situation. One thing I will say is I've heard the record. I've had the record for a few days. I've been blasting it. And I don't review records generally because I think people do a lot better job than I ever do. If something's good, I will just rave about it and go, it's fucking excellent. And they're like, that's not helpful to try. But what I will say is it's a fantastic record. It's really, really fun. It's really, really sad in places. It's thoughtful. It's tongue-in-cheek. It's everything that I want from someone like you as an artist who is kind of empowered as a female artist, but also like there's so much fuzz on the guitars and stuff, and I love that. And because I was kind of like listening to it, I'm like, okay, cool, it's like kind of a mix of like Eilish and like Rodriguez and like Avril Lavigne and like all these different kind of influences that I love, and I'm like, this is just fucking sick, like as a whole package. And you can have that, you can write that on the poster if you like, is fucking sick as an album thing. But
oh, I'm so glad you like it, and that makes me so happy to hear, because yeah, they, you know, there's big influences of mine. And I think on this record I did kind of like embrace my more commercial pop side in a way, which has been fun for me. But also I just don't think I'm ever going to be the sort of person to let go of guitars and let go of those rock underlying Weezer influences. It's just never going to happen. That's just who I am. So I think that will always be embodied and the foundation of what I do. But it's really exciting to do this record and kind of introduce new elements. It's been a really good time.
So I wanted to kind of ask, for those of people who haven't heard the record as they're listening to this podcast and things, how would you describe the sound of you as an artist and the album, and how would you kind of encompass? Because I could easily go, they sound like this, they sound like that, but it's better just to ask the person who created it, to be honest, how you want to be pigeonholed and things if you want to be, you know?
I feel like it's kind of very nostalgic to me. It feels like very soundtracky, like early 2000s, 90s kind of rock pop. And it's, you know, like you said, it's very influenced by kind of Avril Lavigne, early Katy Perry. I love Weezer, so they're kind of patterned into everything I do. But as well as kind of like bringing in new influences, like you mentioned Billie Eilish and Olivia Rodrigo and Phoebe Bridgers and all of those sorts of elements have kind of piled in. And the beauty of this being my second record is I kind of felt like I could just do what I wanted. Not like I did with the debut, but there's always something to prove and something to continue on from. And once that was out, I felt like I could really kind of find the missing thing and what I wanted to do and what I wanted to write from that point onwards. So it was great for me to be able to really have fun writing this record. And it did fall out of me.
Yeah, ironically. For sure.
I didn't kind of go, oh, I'm going to sit down and write an album. It just happened. And that's the first time I can say that that has been the case.
Well, that's the joy of it, because I think, and this is such a really bad turn of phrasing, but someone said it to me and it's so perfectly true. If you try and force anything in life, it's more than likely going to be shit. And it's such a weird turn of phrase, but I'm like, it works. If you try and force a relationship, it will not work. If you try and force art, it won't work. So if it comes naturally to you, it feels like the most natural thing to do. So that makes perfect sense. I wanted to touch on the previous record, the debut, which is called Garbage. Garbage Band Superstar. For some reason I read things, my brain doesn't want to compute. It smashed into the top 40, gaining critical support as well as fan reaction alike. But behind the scenes, a lot of things changed in your personal life after that record, and it kind of influenced the start of this record. And the first song on this record hit me like a gut punch, and immediately I was kind of, oh, I was having such a good day, and then I was kind of like, oh, but like, it's authentic. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, immediately 100%. I was kind of like, okay, it's making me feel something. Because the one thing because I'm a self-obsessed kind of music fan. I love music. And if something is indifferent, if I'm like, it's fine. I'll never touch it again. But if it makes me like, I love it or I hate it or it makes me feel something, that's the perfect ingredient. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. And I think with that song, it kind of was the perfect pinpoint for me, because that song was the moment everything did change for me. And these songs just kind of started pouring out and more things happened to me after that moment. But it felt like the best place to start in terms of releasing a first thing from the album and being track one on the album. Because for me, you can't put I Suck at Grieving mm-hmm. after anything.
No, that of course.
That starts this like transition of change. And I think it does feel different for me. But I will say, I do think it remains kind of, there is still tongue in cheek. There is still that kind of hazy attitude about, you know, a death. And that's mm-hmm. something that isn't easy to talk about. And I think I've managed to kind of blanket it in a way that feels like me and feels like how I would deal with a situation like that, which is very true. And it kind of, it doesn't sound sad to me, even though it is a really sad song. I think musically it's really punchy and kind of these pretty, you know, major chords. And it's just, yeah, for me, I wrote that song and I felt like a shift.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's definitely the most personal song I've ever written. I think my first album was so much fun. It really was fun. But I think I was just lacking a little bit of life experience at that point. And unfortunately for me, I did get a lot in a short space of time. But I think that really has curated this next record and for me cemented it as kind of where I go next. And it feels like this record feels a lot more real to me, I think, than the first one.
You know what? It's the perfect thing, because I love kind of anything with a guitar, basically, right? And when I was younger, I'd be like, oh, no, indie, whatever, because I just wanted to listen to Metallica and nothing else. But obviously. Now I listen to it, and when I first time I listened to it, I was immediately caught by the guitar, and I was like, okay, this is cool. And then like I caught the lyrics, and then I was like, oh, that's what we're doing. Like, and it caught me in this sort of juxtaposition, which is kind of really great, because people sometimes they listen to music in the background or like on the bus or whatever, and they'll be like, just duh, 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 suck a, hang on a minute, what did she say? And then you start to think about it, you're like, oh, this is like kind of deep, and it's got like a, do you know what I mean, it's a secondary depth to it, which is perfect. I love it. So yeah, I wanted to touch on as well the kind of the creative output and the outlook and how you kind of go about making songs, because obviously you are a single individual in terms of an artist, but you have a band behind you. How does that kind of work? Do you kind of bring them the orchestration of the guitars and the vocals and things and go, right, cool, put a drum bit to this, put can we play some basses, or do you do it all yourself? How does that kind of all work?
I mean, the great thing about being a solo artist is that there's so much more freedom. You can go and work with whoever you want, whenever you want. And I'm so lucky to have my best friends as my band, really. So for we're always kind of sending each other stuff, which is just amazing, really. But I did work on this record a lot in the States, actually. I went to America and I worked with a few people on it. A guy called Aaron Gillespie, you might know him as the drummer of Under Oath.
Under Oath. I was about to say, I know that name from somewhere. It was like, amazing.
Yeah, he produced the record, but that only really came about because we'd written so many songs together. Me and Aaron gelled straight away, and I've never really worked well with other people. I've always kind of wanted to write with just me and just my friends, and I've never wanted to get out of that box because I've never really met someone where it's felt right. But with Aaron, it just felt like it was supposed to happen. He kind of has this Jack Black in School of Rock energy that really just kind of makes you go to a different place that I couldn't physically get on my own at home. So I kind of became attached to that energy, and we really wrote the hell out of that album, you know, majority together. Especially, and when he kind of said, look, I'd be up for producing it if you wanted me to, there was like not a singular doubt in my mind that it would be the perfect fit. And we did it in 2 weeks in Nashville, which isn't a long time. A lot of people spend, you know, months recording things and arguing over snare sounds and this, that and the other. And he knows that's not me. I'm a songwriter. I'm an artist. I don't tend to like get hung up on certain production bits. And he knows I'm fussy and what I like. And we just managed to just make this thing that felt so original to us in such a short space of time, and we just laughed from start to finish. And again, I think that's something I missed from making the first record, is because I was like, ah, it's an album, it's got to be this, this has got to be like this, my vocal's got to sit there. And I really just got rid of all of that stress, and there feels like there's this natural carefree energy that's come from it because of that. So yeah, I think when you have the right collaborators, it's the best thing ever. It's just finding that right other person to be in the room with you.
Absolutely. And Aaron Gillespie is obviously a legend. He's been around the block for a long time in terms of Under Oath, and obviously in the production scene as well. So yeah, that's wicked. I didn't actually know that. That's wicked cool. And
yeah,
it also makes a lot of sense where there's definitely a big bite behind the guitars and things like that. Like, there's definitely had his fingerprints all over it.
And he drummed across the whole record as well. And, and he did that in about, I think he did all 12 tracks in about 3 hours. It was absolutely amazing. It was hilarious actually to watch. I was like, that's insane. I can't even compute it.
Absolutely. So one thing I like to do with bands and artists is take them right back to the very beginning, right? So you grew up on the Isle of Wight, as I understand it. Wanted to kind of ask, because like I'm from Norwich, right? So we're not that far apart, but obviously it's part of the UK. I sometimes feel like we are just an island, and we are like, we're so insignificant in terms of like the powers of America and like Europe and all these different things in terms of music. And it's like, but we do make some fantastic bands, right?
Yeah.
So, and then I started looking into the Isle of Wight, and obviously you've got the Isle of Wight Festival, obviously, Bestival, all of those things. What's it like growing up there, and what is like the music scene like? Because I've never been, but it's kind of, what is that kind of, I guess it's kind of the small town syndrome, as I call it, where everybody kind of knows everybody. And if you're up and coming, you've obviously, you know, you've made a lot of friends and connections through that, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah. If you've got a guitar on your back on the Isle of Wight, we know each other. It just is one of those things, which is a blessing and a curse, but it is mostly a lovely thing. And I mean, growing up on the Isle of Wight was so fun. I had such a fun childhood, you know, just surrounded by like beaches. It's a quiet place. It's beautiful as well. So that's always been, you know, lovely. But I think for me, it's like the sense of there was nothing to do really kind of pushed me to do something for myself, because I didn't, there wasn't really much of a social thing, there wasn't really loads for me to go and do. I lived in the middle of nowhere, so I was like, what am I gonna do from like after school till I have to go to sleep? There's got to be something I could do. So I, you know, that's when I like picked up guitar and started writing songs. And I think if my life had been different, I think if I was born somewhere else, I don't know if I would have fallen into it, because I wasn't naturally like, oh my God, I'm a singer, I'm this, I'm that. It was really me forcing myself to have a hobby, because I was like, I'm bored. So I was like, what am I going to do? And I remember trying a bunch of different things, and then I had a guitar lesson and something just kind of resonated with me. And I was like, no, I want to do this. And that was really where it kind of started for me. But yeah, no, there is actually a really good growing scene here. Like recently, bands like Wet Leg from here have just like, you know, just shown that it can be done, and that's such a refreshing thing. Yeah, there's just a lot of bands here, I think, for similar reasons to me. There's not, you know, there hasn't always been much else to do, and there's a music college here as well. So I think it's always been a bit of a hotspot for like creatives, really.
Absolutely. And that's the thing as well, if you're kind of, again, I'm from Norwich, and like, you know, we get very lucky in terms of bands coming through, but we are in the kind of the arse end of nowhere for a lot of time. We're a lot of countryside and lots of fields. So if you kind of you know, you have to find your own thing, and you have to find your own entertainment and things like that. And I'm pretty certain it was Andy Cairns of Therapy, who I had on the podcast about a year ago, said to me, if you learn guitar and pick up guitar, you'll never be lonely, because you can always just pick that up and just have a play on it and like figure something in. It's just it's a perfect thing. And I wish I could learn to play guitar. I tried to play bass about a year ago. I bought it during COVID and was like, this is be fun, I'm gonna learn to play bass. Touched it maybe twice, but that says more about me than anything else.
Oh no. So
I wanted to kind of ask as well, what was the first CD that you bought with your own money? Or the other question you can ask if you prefer is, what was the first band you obsessed over as a teenager?
So I think mine's probably a little bit cringe. I think mine was...
I don't believe there's anything as cringe. It's fine.
No, there isn't actually. I think it was... The Wanted, I think it was.
Okay, I was like thinking The Wanted. I was like, I've not heard of them, but yeah, no, of course, yeah.
I remember going to see them at Bournemouth International Centre with my mum.
Nice.
Just being like, and I remember waiting like by the back door, hoping that they'd come out. And that was like my first taste of like obsession, really. So it's really fun when you go on tour with bands now and you support a band and they have those sorts of fans and you're like, oh God, that was me. It's really nice to like be on the other side of the door, actually.
Well, that's the thing. So I've been lucky enough with this podcast over the last 4 years to go to different events and things. And like, I'll go to a festival and I'll be in like the media area. And like, I suffer from the biggest imposter syndrome. It's the worst.
Yeah.
And you know what? I had interviewed a few bands and stuff. And one of them said to me, he went, you know what? Unless you're that guy. And he pointed to Dan P. Carter of Radio 1. Unless you're that guy, everyone else is fucking winging it. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
And I instantly was like, that's okay. It doesn't matter. Like, he's like, everyone else is winging it. It's fine. Like,
everyone's doing the same thing. 100%.
So I wanted to ask, have you ever been in a situation where you've seen someone at a festival or a gig and think, oh my God, that's so-and-so. And have you gone over to them and said anything? Have you had that kind of the fangirl moment with another artist as such?
For sure. I mean, I'm notoriously like, I do get imposter syndrome, but I'm an opportunist. So if I'm in a situation where I feel like I am an imposter, I'll be like, right, it's go time. Let's make some moves.
Yeah, amazing. Well, that's the best way to be.
That's how my brain works. So I know I shouldn't be there, but I'm going to abuse the system anyway. So when you found yourself on the Reading and Leeds poster, you may as well go in the guest VIP area and kind of track down some celebs.
Yeah,
so I was kind of trying to make some moves. I remember I saw Youngblood and I just shouted his name and he turned to look at me and he'd recently played a song of mine on Radio 1. Oh, so amazing. I just went up to him and like just started chatting.
Yeah.
He probably has no idea who I am and that's absolutely fine. But for me, that was a nice moment. I was like, yeah, I know him. I spoke to him once.
Yeah, absolutely.
met Jedward last year as well. That was quite fun.
That's iconic. That's actually iconic.
My favourite. The family group chat loved that one when that went slid in there.
I love that. So I wanted to talk about life on the road, because an artist's bread and butter is on the road, and I guess a lot of people, that's why they get into it, and kind of they play the songs and then the songs become a vehicle to go and tour the world and play to fans. And I feel like most artists, that's where they're most at home. How do you find life on tour? And if there's one thing, if I told you tomorrow that you're going on tour, right, you might well be going on tour tomorrow, I'm not too sure, but what's the one thing that you're double checking in your bag that you've brought with you?
It's my passport. Every single time.
The most practical answer. And
it literally is, because my mum has ingrained in me ever since I was a kid. As long as you've got your passport, everything else is replaceable. You can't replace your passport.
Yeah, true.
So literally I am, even if I don't leave the UK, I'm like, have I got my passport?
Yeah, absolutely.
Just in case. You just never know when you might need it. I very practically it would be my passport, followed closely by probably my favourite pants or something. Something for quite impractical, but personally nice for me.
Absolutely.
So yeah, that would be my choice.
Nice. So when you do get on the road and stuff and the album is released, is there any songs that you're particularly looking forward to playing live that you haven't already yet?
I'm really, really excited to play Happy For You live. I think that's going to be really fun. We started to play Second Prettiest Girl and Girlfriend Material on the last tour we did in January, and that was so fun. And it's just really like brought the set to life for me again, playing these new tracks. And I think even songs like Anti-Fragile will be so nice. I can't wait for On the Headline tour to have those moments where it's kind of just me and a guitar again, and I can kind of do those songs. And yeah, I think it's going to be really fun.
So I wanted to ask, and please tell me if I'm encroaching on anything I shouldn't, right, but Second Prettiest Girl in the Room, is that a literal like thing that happened to you in your life, or was it just because I was listening to that the other day and I was like, this is a great song, but if this actually happened, fuck that guy.
Right?
Absolutely
honestly,
mad.
Yeah, I went on a date and I don't really date. I don't do that. I've kind of come out of like quite a long thing.
Yeah.
So sure. I was just like, during the writing this album as well, I was sort of trying to get back in the world a little bit and try and exist and remember what that was like, which wasn't fun actually, I will admit. And I think some of those experiences did did kind of shake the record. And there was like a moment when I went on a date with this guy and he was trying to give me a compliment, I believe.
Yeah.
Which turned out to be like the biggest backhand insult, which I didn't quite clock until I'd gone home.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh no, that's not a compliment. That's actually not very nice at all.
Because that's the thing. Like, yeah, I think sometimes people, I mean, I'm batting for the guy in the sense that I hope he didn't mean it as it came out, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
In his head, he thinks he's Picasso. Picasso, that's not right. What's the word I'm thinking of? Picasso's the fucking painter. I'm thinking of, bloody hell. Like, there's the really, doesn't matter. Romeo and Juliet. That's what I kind of, he thinks he's that. And then he's actually just basic, just absolute tool move.
It was so funny. I think that period for me was so funny, actually. And I think a lot of the lightness that is in the album came from those moments, because there's nothing funnier than when you just kind of step back into something and it's like a bit of a culture shock and a reality thing where you're like, oh yeah, this is what the world's like. I forgot about that. So you're kind of like grieving your past relationship, deciding what you didn't like about all of that stuff, and then going into more of these funny little negative things, and you just like have to laugh your way through it. So I think, a lot of the record was influenced by that little time in my life as well, which was quite funny.
Absolutely. I wanted to ask, where is the strangest or the weirdest place you've ever played a show? Now, and what I mean by that is it doesn't have to be a negative thing. It can be just you've arrived somewhere, you've set up your bits, and you've looked around at your bandmates and gone, who said this was okay? Why are we here? Like, we've had people say like they've played like pizza parlors, which is, you know, obviously cool. That's a cool thing. We've had people say they've played weird kind of like sex venues. That's, you know, I'm not gonna say less cool, but you know what I mean. It's got a bit of an eyebrowsing situation. Has there been, you've been any kind of experiences where you've played a show and you think, who booked this? Why? Well, this is cool, but why? This is weird.
I remember I played a show at an Urban Outfitters once, which was so random.
That's what we're talking about.
That was in Manchester, and that was for, they were doing like this collaboration with another brand, and they just like wanted to like make a party or something. So I provided the entertainment slash the party. We rocked up at this Urban Outfitters, still open, and we just start setting up, moving sweatshirts, building a stage, and I just kept looking around going, this ain't right. She's literally trying to buy an overpriced t-shirt there. I don't know what's going on.
I love that. I love the idea of, you know, people just trying to do their shot. And that's the thing as well. Urban Outfitters is kind of one of those stores where I feel like you could get away with it. But like,
but it was almost like people in there are too cool to be like, what's going on?
You know what I mean? Exactly.
You're just kind of in the way and you've just got drums and you're walking through the shop and people are like, what is going on? That was a moment where I did look around and go, oh, it's a bit weird.
For sure, for sure. And when you're talking sort of on your own headline runs and you've actually in a proper quote-unquote venue, you're in a proper place and it's all like, you know, it's not an Urban Outfitters, what's going through your mind slash your, what you're doing sort of 30 minutes before you hit the stage? Because some bands and some artists, they take some time for themselves and go and like just sort of be on their own and kind of get inside their own head and things and sort of do that. Other bands come together and do like a huddle and things like that. What's kind of like your vibe sort of 30 to 40 minutes before you hit the stage?
Yeah, I'd say like half an hour before. I'm normally fine throughout the day. Like throughout the day, I'm quite excited. We sound check, eat, all of that stuff. And then about like half an hour before I go on, I kind of shut down a little bit and just take like, I won't leave the room. I'll be with everyone, but I will just like go in on myself for about 20 minutes just to try and like, I think like get some inner calm, because I do, you know, it's a, when you're doing a headline show as well, it's a big thing and you know, there are nerves fluttering about and you want to do a good job. And yeah, I think there's always that element. I get it a lot in London as well. I've got this thing about London shows and the kind of big city thing.
Mm-hmm.
I go in on myself for 20 minutes, and then normally like 10 minutes before when we're about to go down to stage, like me and, because we're all friends, we kind of just, we sing stupid songs, someone will get the Bluetooth speaker out, we'll start kind of bigging each other up a little bit, and that's when the kind of energy comes out more positively, I think.
Yeah.
But I like to kind of shut down for a minute before I go, all right, let's get in the mood then.
the calm before the storm, as they say.
Yeah, because you, it's almost good to have had a little bit of a jump about before you go on, because otherwise you're knackered. You're like,
yeah,
just straight out of the, you know, straight out of the gate. You've gone from like lying on a sofa to running about. It's quite different.
Absolutely. So. And that's the thing as well. You've played some pretty iconic festivals. Isle of Wight Festival, Best of All, Glastonbury as well. Kind of, how do you kind of quantify those experiences? Because I guess kind of, and I'm talking sort of in a generic term of that, you can call it uncle, auntie, whatever, who sort of is on the fringe of the family, and they go, oh, what are you doing with yourself, Lauren? I'm still a musician. Like, and you have to sort of go, oh, but I've done this. And then they go, oh no, cool, I saw you on TV and you were doing this and you're doing that. You know, that must be kind of a cool moment, I guess.
Those moments are really nice, because it's a hard thing to explain to people what you do, especially when you're not Beyonce, because that's what people understand. People understand Beyonce level success. They can't quite compute when you've got 30,000 followers and you're doing local in stores and building up, and people can't quite get that. So when you can say, oh, I'm playing Glastonbury, or oh, yeah, I'm playing Reading and Leeds, oh, I'm going on tour All Time Low, then people start to go, oh, that's quite good.
Yeah.
So it's nice to have those moments, just like out of a little bit of ego and pride, really, to kind of sit with, because there's so many times you have to explain yourself. So I think it's so nice to just have those little middle finger moments and go, yeah, I'm playing Glastonbury. Like, it's a fun thing. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So I think for me, that's like a full circle thing. Keeps everyone quiet for a little while.
Absolutely. And that's the thing. I want to kind of touch on the All Time Low thing, because obviously Alex All Time Low is on one of the tracks on the album and stuff. How did that kind of collaboration come about? Was that, again, just being in America and things like that? How did that come about?
Yeah, so I met Alex because I did a writing session with him when I was in America, and I was so nervous about it, because I was so nervous to meet him, because I've been such a fan of that band for such a long time. So I was like, oh my god, this is so scary. And we actually wrote that song in that session.
Amazing.
And he provisionally just put some kind of backing vocals underneath, because we wanted like a lower harmony. And it ended up just like sounding criminal to not have him on it, have his voice on it. So we kind of manufactured that so that song could feature him, really. And it was from that moment, really, where we kind of started doing touring together. We started with UK and Europe, and we just got on like a house on fire. They honestly are the loveliest guys, and we had the best time, which was then followed by a US tour, which was my first US tour, and even an Australian tour. So it's just like last year was just All Time Low for me, which was amazing.
Absolutely. And I guess 2024, once the album out, and I know that it's the $1 million question, what's ahead, but I guess it's just more of the same, more touring, more seeing the world, more playing shows and things like that in 2024.
Exactly.
Once the album's out.
Yeah, I'm definitely planning on doing a big headline tour, which includes America, Europe, amazing, as well as the UK. So it's really nice to feel like that's an option, because I guess being so influenced by American artists and American music, and I've always just loved American TV, and I've always just wanted to be there. So it's so nice to be able to have that be my reality to a degree. And having, you know, done this record out in the States with Aaron as well, it just feels like a door's open for me, and I just would love to keep going back and trying to make that work as well. Keep building.
Absolutely. I've got a couple of final questions before I let you on your way, and I'm so, so grateful for your time. The first of which, right, and I feel like as a fellow Brit, right, you're gonna get down with this, right? So when insert big brand here, it could be Spotify, Amazon Music, whoever hosts podcasts buys this podcast off me, I'm going to have loads of lovely corporate sponsor money from the big label, right? Now, rather than reinvesting it back in the podcast like a normal human being, I'm going to blow it all on one big festival, right? Lauren Hibbard, you are invited to the festival to play, right? Because we've got a lovely big festival with loads and loads of money and loads of space, we can have whatever we want on the rider for the artists of said festival.
Amazing.
Right? So what I want to know is what you would like to add to the rider. And by the way, we've already had, I think, how many episodes did I do last year? 104? So we've got already had 100.
We've got a big list.
We've got a big list, but it's fine because Spotify's paying for it, or insert other brand. Right. Don't mind who. So what would you like to have? We've had everything from people having like masseuses there, like truck fulls of puppies. Someone said to me,
I was going to say dogs.
It's fine. You can say something like, but someone said to me, I just want Taylor Swift. And I was like, in what capacity? Yeah. Like, just sort of that's hanging not around and just milling about. I was like, fair enough. We've had all the way to like the massive extremes of like roller coasters and like all these kind of crazy things.
That's a good idea.
What would you like to have and what would you like to add?
Do you know what I'm going to chuck in there? Sometimes, and this has happened to me a few times, where we get to a festival and they're offering like free haircuts and like free
amazing
hair colors and stuff. Yep. I'm always like, yeah, go on then. I'd love a little on-site hair situation, little hairdresser.
Nice. Yeah, yeah.
Give me and the band a little trim up. That'd be lovely pre-show. Especially if I've already got roller coasters and dogs. It's got one. I'm sitting down eating the snacks that are already on the rider, the drinks are already on the rider. I just want someone to kind of, you know, cut my hair as well.
Spruce you up a little bit.
Pre-show. Feels right.
I love that. You know what? I went to Outbreak Festival, which is basically a hardcore / hip-hop festival in Manchester last year, and they had a haircut thing, and I didn't get it. Like, I sort of was like, well, this is strange, but also this is really cool because they're all getting like,
it's so cool.
I don't know what the thing is. Is it crew cuts cool when they do like all the cool stuff that kids are down with these days? I have no idea. I get short back and sides, but it was just kind of one of those things like, that's kind of weird. Also, kind of cool. I like it. Like,
it's fun. I like it. It's kind of like, well, there's, you know, when you're at a festival, there's a lot of time to kill before you go on, and it's just something, feel like you've ticked something off the list. I don't have to do that on the weekend now. I've had my haircut at work.
Absolutely, absolutely.
On the job.
So, yeah. Lauren, I've done this podcast for 4 years this year, and amazing. Every single artist I've asked this question to, it's a question directly for you, and the answer is yours, and it's, you know, there's no right or wrong answer. But it's a simple question. What is the best thing for you about being a musician?
Playing live, 100%. It's the only reason I get the biggest kick out of that. Hearing someone sing something you wrote back to you, if you could sell that, you'd be a millionaire. It's the best feeling on earth. So, for sure, playing live.
Amazing. I love that. The new album, Girlfriend Material, is out on the 22nd of March, which will be either out now or coming out this week as people will hear and listen to this. Is there anything you want to say, anything you want to plug, anything we've missed out or need to talk about before we wrap things up?
Go and listen to the album. It's my life's work, guys.
Absolutely.
So don't let me down. Come and see me at the in-store tour. I'm around the UK, doing a couple of dates. So yeah, come and get your record signed. Say hi. Yeah, it's going to be fun.
Amazing stuff. Amazing stuff. And I want to say on record as well, a massive, massive shout out to your PR people, Lydia and Matt, for sorting this one out. Yeah. What an absolute hero. Because I'm so glad we got to do this. This has been absolutely perfect. And you know what?
Thank you so much.
I would love to come and do this in person at the live shows when they get announced, because the record is fucking sick, and you'll find me somewhere near the front, but not in the mosh pit because I'm too old.
Not too close.
Yeah, I don't want to like steal the limelight. Do you know what I mean?
I'm the same.
Love it. Thank you very much, mate. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon and evening, and we'll catch up very soon.
Thanks for that.
See you later. Peace.